been in a war yet, but this boy's got utter belief in himself.
And somehow, she's found the acceleration.
Hello, everyone. Coming to you live from Haywood Field after a tremendous day one of the 2023 Prefontaine Classic. What an afternoon of track and field. It got started with Ry Benjamin for the first time ever in a race where Carson Warholm was healthy, taking him down to get the Diamond League title, 46.39, his second fastest time ever. Epic 400-meter hurdles race. We had Christian Coleman making a statement, winning the men's 100. Sharika Jackson beats Sha'Carri Richardson for the first time in 100. She gets the Diamond League title in that event. Faith Kipyegon runs another 350, closing out one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen, history of the sport. But the race we got to talk about was the Bowerman Mile. It was hyped as going to be a very fast race, maybe a world record attempt. We got even more than we bargained for. I was expecting brilliance, and that's exactly what we got. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, 343.73. European record, Diamond League record, meet record, personal best, just 6/10 of a second off of Hisham El-Khourouj's world record. And right behind him, the entire way, American Yared Nuguse, 343.97. Let's repeat that. Yared Nuguse, 343.97. Obliterating the American record in the mile. Weldon, that's going to take a while for me to get used to that sentence, that Yared Nuguse is a 343 miler.
Unbelievable run. I mean, an unbelievable night of track and field. This meet delivered from the gun. I mean, that first 400-meter hurdle race. But, John, when you're going through the stuff, I'm like, just get to it, man. This mile was amazing. And heading into it, I was so focused on Jakob. I thought for sure the record was going down.
Like the world record?
Running really fast, the world record. I just thought for sure he would get it, like 80% confidence. And I was so focused on that during the race. I still don't think I appreciated the beauty of what Nuguse did. He challenged him to the line. I mean, it never really was in doubt. But
oh, it was. You didn't think it was in doubt midway down the home straight? I did.
I don't know. I still maybe then this one, this is where the pacing light. I was trying to stare at the lights because at the bell, I was pretty confident they weren't going to get the record. But with the lights there, you're sort of trying to figure out, is it the front of the light or the back of the light? None of that matters. Can we just appreciate a great race, right? Like when the world record was broken, and that's one thing that we also need to give some respect to. 24 years ago, two guys did this, but better. They both ran faster.
Without super shoes. No, Weldon, that's the exact race I thought of, because the mile world record in Rome in 1999, where Hisham El-Khourouj set it, he was pushed all the way to the line by Noah Nyet. And we essentially, it's fitting. I mean, I guess it would have been fitting if they broke the record and got it that way. But it's fitting that the fastest mile we've seen since then, it was basically the exact same thing. It was kind of the ruler of the event, Ingebrigtsen, and it was a upstart, a challenger, Nuguse, pushing him the entire way. Oh, it was just, it wasn't just fast times. It was an amazing race. And that's what Yared said his strategy basically was like, look, I was just going to go with him no matter what. And if I blew up, if I died, I died. I wasn't going to let him get away. And he really didn't. You know, the one thing we've seen is there have been times on the Diamond League circuit where Jakob was able to get a gap, or with 200 meters to go, he's really able to separate. He separated a little with 200 to go, but Yared fought back. I mean, Yared, he said he still had something in the tank at that point. He closed the gap a little. He could never quite get there, but phenomenal performance by both of these men. Just a perfect way to end the first day of the pre-classic.
Yeah, I've got the screenshot up there for those of you listening as a podcast. You want this as a podcast, you got to be a Supporters Club member. Let'srun.com/subscribe. I take it back, John. He got within like a stride and a half of him.
Yeah.
Down that home stretch. And he also went way wide. And that was his, I think he just was like, I've got a shot. I'm just going as hard as I can this final 100 meters. And kudos to him. I mean, we forget, like, this guy, the World Championships, I know he had fun and whatnot, But it was disappointing from a performance level for Yard and a Goose. He did not medal. And for him to bounce back and nearly take down Jakob, who knows what this does for next year? I mean, I started thinking about this. I just like, wow, like you can't get that much faster. I mean, the Goose is within 1 second of the world record in the 1500. I mean, the mile. And you think, okay, well, the mile's a little bit softer than the 1500. It's not that much softer. I think these are equivalent to like 327 mid times for Nagus, or no, 327 high for Nagus, 327 mid for Jakob.
Yeah.
Man, that's just so that really was, good.
So that was one of my big takeaways. Obviously, a terrific effort by both men in this race. But Jakob, we've seen this level from Jakob Ingebrigtsen before. 327.14 in Silesia, pretty similar to 343.73 for a mile in Eugene. We have not seen Yard Nagus touch this level before. We haven't seen something. I mean, this is more than a second better than his 329.02 from Oslo. And the interesting thing to me, Weldon, I don't know if you thought about this, 1999 in Rome, El Garouge wins, but Nien pushes him all the way to the line. Who won the Olympics the next year?
Repeat the question, John.
1999, when El Garouge beats Nien, Nien pushes him all the way to the line in Rome. Those two guys raced again in the Olympics. El Garouge, a noted front runner. Who won that Olympic final in Sydney?
Oh, yeah. El Garouge. So that's the thing.
No, Nien won the final. Well done. That's the whole point. Is the guy that was Nien would hang with him in Rome, and then 1 year later, he was beating him on the biggest stage in the sport. And I'm not saying that Yared will do that, but I mean, you got to think about it. If they're pretty similar in fitness, and Jakob tries what he does in a championship final like that, Yared Nagus very well positioned to just run him down if Jakob's pacing the entire way instead of pacing just the final 700.
Yeah, I totally botched what I was saying. Could give him a lot of confidence for next year. And he did gain on him. The final 100, net to net, he gained a little bit on him, still at 343 pace. So a big step up in time for Nagus. You know, he goes from 329 to essentially 327. And an amazing season for Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Yet, what are we doing right now, John?
We're wondering, will he win the Olympics? Because he's been beaten in the last two global championships. I mean, if Jakob wins Worlds, we're saying, hey, this is maybe the greatest 1500 season we've seen since El Garouge. And I think honestly, to be fair to Jakob, it probably is still up there. I know we got silver, but 343 in the mile, 327 in the 1500. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal from start to finish, but he doesn't have that one gold medal.
Wow, John, I put up a comment here by David Reed. Fantastic race. Biggest loser is Josh Kerr. I completely forgot about Josh Kerr. I think at one point, during the race, maybe like 1,200 meters in, I actually did think of Josh Kerr. And I was like, yeah, maybe he didn't think he could run with Jakob in a time trial, so that's why he skipped it. But he's the world champion. He ran fast this year. The 1500, it's going to be epic next year. These guys are running great times. You know, people are speculating about El Garouche, and oh, people are now just approaching his times. 11 guys went sub 350 today. And that's what, like 332 equivalent, somewhere in there. So maybe that's not that shocking. There is one thing that's different. We have different shoes. So is this the greatest era of miling? I'm not going to even go that far because I think the shoes really help them. But it's such an interesting event, and we still appreciate the fast times, even if they are at the benefit of shoes. I mean, who knows what people were benefiting back in the day, right? Drug testing what isn't what it is now. So just things are coming together with everybody running really fast. I mean,
no,
Cole Hawker.
Cole Hawker, by the way, 348.08 for sixth place. The only Americans who've ever run faster, Nagus, Webb, and Steve Scott. So he's number four all time now. But this makes 2024 so much more interesting because Yared is just at a different level. This was a breakthrough on top of the breakthrough he's already had this year. And the most interesting storyline would have been if Yared won the race and beat him, or if Yard, you know, broke the world record. It's kind of crazy to say if Yard broke the world record. He was less than a second away. So, but no, this is the 1500s. Even it was already going to be interesting next year, but to have an American running this fast, well, then American has run 3:43 in the mile. I didn't know if I would ever see that before I died. I didn't know if I would see an American run 3:43 in the mile. It's just, it can't be overstated how good Yared Nuguse has been from start to finish. He ran 3:47 on February 11th. It is now September 16th, and he ran 3:43. And his level really hasn't dipped at all in between that. It's been phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously the best season by an American miler. Well, people want to probably say Jim Ryan or something at some point.
People would say Matthew Centrowitz won World Indoors and the Olympics in 2016. It depends on what you value. This is the best, like, on the circuit, on the Diamond League era, right? On the circuit, yes. But Matthew Centrowitz was a more successful miler in championships. And Jim Ryan was breaking world records when he was 19. So we got to remember, remember the context, but it is a phenomenal season from Yared Nuguse.
Yeah. I don't know why I keep downplaying Centrowitz's Olympic year, because he won World Indoors that year. He won the Olympics. The thing he didn't have was the fast times. Nuguse has been running fast, as you said, John, since indoors. And people want to know from Robert Johnson, who's here in the comments. John, do you think the weather, you're there, 82 degrees today, which is a bit warm from Eugene in September. Do you think that had anything to do with it?
No. If the weather had a negative impact, they wouldn't have run 3:43. You don't run 3:43 in bad conditions. The wind, Jakob did say he felt the wind a little in the back straight, but I was watching the flags. There might have been a little bit, but, and he felt it more because he's the one breaking the wind. Yared basically was like, yeah, I didn't really feel it that much because Jakob was in front of me the whole way. But no, the conditions, it's a 3-minute race. I don't think the weather really had much to do with it. The one thing Jakob did say, which I thought was interesting, he said, when you run a race in the daylight, you can't see the pacing lights as clearly. And I didn't realize how much, I didn't think everyone paid attention that much. I didn't know how much the athletes in the race actually looked at the pacing lights. Jakob evidently looks quite a lot, because he was like, yeah, there are a few times in the race where I lost sight of it. And, if this was in the evening, do they run 3:43.1? I don't know. But I think they got pretty much everything they could out of themselves. But that was the one thing Jakob noted, was it was hard to pick up the pacing lights in daylight.
Yeah, just watching on television a couple of times, I thought they were hard to see. And I thought it was interesting. I feel like right before the bell, Jakob looked back. And he looked back coming down the home stretch at one point. He's just very aware of what's going on. And I guess you can't – the Jumbotrons – when you're coming towards the finish at Prix, it's a little bit harder to see. There's one up in the top left corner, right? Is that one still there?
Yes.
But it's not like right in front of the athletes, whereas a lot of the times now the stadiums, there's just a big screen right in front of them.
Yeah.
So
well, all right, let me give you the scoop. Well, then I did talk to Yared and Jakob at length. So let's give you some insight from what they had to say. That was the first point, was the pacing lights. Jakob noted that. And he said they were set to world record pace in the end, but I think it was going out a little slower and then picking up like he likes to do. He claims, it's like, yeah, it didn't have anything to do with the world record. I just thought, it happened to be set 1/10 faster than the world record, because that's, I thought the time I wanted to hit. I'm just like, come on, dude. Like, he wasn't billing this as a world record attempt, but it's okay to admit you were going for the world record. So that was one thing. But then I asked him, I'm like, is it bittersweet at all to come so close to the record, even though you ran so fast? You're running a huge PB, but you didn't get the record. And he's like, oh, I wasn't close to the record. He's like, no, not bitter at all. He's like 6/10 of a second. That's still a lot of time. So, he didn't think he came that close. What do you make of that?
I actually agree with him. When someone gets smoked by 0.6 and a 1500 these days, that's a pretty convincing win. So it's not like he missed it by 0.1, whatever. I mean, but when you go back and watch, I went back to watch to sort of figure out how the lights work. You have to be at the very front light. It's not that far ahead, but if you're where that light was, I'm trying to think how many meters I would say it is. Maybe like 6 or 7 ahead. It's close enough. I see what he's saying, but I don't know. I mean, for the casual fan, for us at home, even it was close enough. I felt pretty sure at the bell he wasn't going to get the record. John, do you have any thoughts about that, or are you just sort of too caught up, you know, being there? And wait, John, did you run back up in the stadium to watch the race live? I hope you did, but I know at a Diamond League sometimes there's just so much going on.
Where did you watch? 100%. I was like, I'm not missing the Bowman Mile, especially. I was like, I felt pretty sure the American record was going to go down, so I wanted to see that. I wasn't sure about a world record, but I'm like, come on, I got to see this race. So the cost to you, Weldon, was actually Dave Ross might have gotten Sha'Carri Richardson for you, but that was right when a lot of the 100 people were coming through, so I didn't get to talk to Thompson Hurrah or Coleman or Sha'Carri Richardson, but I did get to see the race in person. I was very glad I did.
Apologies accepted, John. I've always said, if people working for me don't want to see the race live, they probably shouldn't be working for me anymore. Let's run.com. We're the home of passion, baby. Passionate track and field fans. What about, I know you talked to Ritz as well, and Yared, sort of like give us insight from their perspective.
Yeah, Ritz was basically like, you know, Yared is a pretty chill guy most of the time, but he's like off the worlds. You know, I think finishing fifth bothered him a little bit. He's like, he was pretty fired up the last few weeks, and Ritz wasn't sure that was going to be there or not, you know, coming down off a championship. And it was that, you know, he was focused, and their approach was like, look, we're just going to go with Jakob, and we're just going to stick on him, and doesn't matter the pace, we're just going with him. And that's what he did. But yeah, Ritz felt, he's like, yeah, I think he got pretty much everything possible out of him. You know, he's like, I don't think he left anything on the table. That was the absolute best he could have done. And it is funny. I talked to him afterwards. I'm like, looking at what he's done on the circuit this year, he got two Diamond League wins. He's won in London and Zurich. Now second behind Jakob, way ahead of everyone else. Now, granted, there were a few guys missing from this field. He was second in Rabat, and he was third in Oslo. I'm just like, how the hell did he only get fifth at the World Championships? It's not like fifth is a bad result, but it didn't make sense to me that he's so consistent all year long. I'm like, is it just the rounds? And Ritz is basically like, look, it was, the margins are a little closer in the World Championship final. Everyone's just a little bit closer. It can be tough. There's a lot of good guys. And he's like, you know, and sometimes people are battling some sort of illness or something like that. And he kind of like strongly hinted that Neguse might not have been 100% at the World Championships, but that kind of clarified. And I think by the final, he was feeling okay. But, you know, you never know what people are going through off the track. But he's like, yeah, look, fifth in the world, you can't call that a disappointment or an underperformance. It was his first World Championship.
Wait a second, John. Clarify for the record. Yard was sick at Worlds. You still kind of said it, hinted at it, then you took it back and said he's fine for the finals. I just want,
well, he was fine
in your
for the
assessment,
final, but
did Ritz...
Ritz was essentially wanted to say, like, look, we didn't want to make excuses about things and say that was why, you know, he was off. But it seemed like he wasn't 100% for the first couple rounds, but for the final, he was all right and didn't think that should be an excuse for why he got fifth.
Well, that should be a little message board fodder. People are still talking about Jakob's illness to the world. Have we forgotten? He's got another race tomorrow.
I know, the 3K. No, I asked him about that. I'm like, wait, so did you request a 3K? He's like, no, they just asked me to run the 3K and I did it. The mile was my big, I was always going to come here to run the mile. That was my big preference. That's what I'm focused on. The 3K, he kind of, I think he just views it as fun. But he says that he did not request the 3000, that was someone else's decision. So that was his explanation for why they're running a 3K tomorrow.
Thomas Lester here in the comments is saying Jakob missed it by 3.5 meters. I haven't verified that, but that seems about right. Maybe that's like, you know, about 10 feet. I could see something like that. And Thomas is like one of our best commenters. So Robin Bauer here in the comments, he will smoke the 1500 mile records in the next two years and the 3000. I assume she's talking about Jakob and not Yared, but
it's the question now. It's like you know, you got to wonder that. Yared, same guy who ran 728 indoors in January before the race, where I was someone, when Sam Parsons was suggesting the American record could go down, and I'm like, No freaking way. I mean, think about what we thought of Yara Neguse a year ago this time. Well, then this was a guy who didn't even make the U.S. team in the 1500 last year. He was like 11th in the final. Granted, he'd doing some injuries, but I don't know. I mean, did we ever think he would get to this level where he's running a 343 mile? I thought the guy'd be good, but you could win the Olympics and not run 343. Like, it's just insane, his improvement this year.
Yeah, 343. I mean, we didn't see it. People are saying, oh, Let's Run should apologize to him. Robert Johnson was one of the biggest Yara Neguse fans for a long time. You know, it was more like, oh, he's going to make the Olympic team. I mean, like, I don't
apologize
think anyone...
to Yara for what?
I don't know, discounting him or something. But
discounting him? We've been singing his praises all year.
Yeah, I agree.
100%. What do you want me to say?
But I don't think anyone from, you know, from the start of the year, where his PBs were, you could predict where he ended up. I mean, just absolutely astounding. And this event's so good. Niels Laros, 18 years old. Let me just confirm the actual time he ran today. He was only ninth place. Yeah, 3:48.93.
Dutch record. Yeah, you know, we talked about the top two in this race. George Mills was third in 3:47. 3:47 before this, you would say 3:47. This guy, you know, is he meddling at Worlds? He's probably, I mean, he was third in the Diamond League final, so it's pretty darn good. George Mills didn't even make the British team this year. That's how competitive that country is. And he's talking about, like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of talent in Great Britain right now. It's going to be tough, but I this is a really good result for me. But I'm thinking, I'm like, this guy, he just ran 3:47 and got third in the Diamond League final. He's by no means a lock to make the British team next year, because you've got Whiteman, you've got Kerr, you've got Gourley, you've got Elliot Giles. It's just, that's going to be a brutal team to make. Like, the British Olympic trials in the 1500, that's going to be one of the races of the year right there.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, you're Jake Whiteman, you're the world champion, or you were the world champion. There's a chance, John, he never makes another British team again.
I mean,
John,
a small chance, but you know, here's the thing that what he said last year, what Whiteman said before Worlds, is like, you know, I want to make sure I'm 100% for Worlds, but so he was only about 90% or something at the British trials, but 90% of Jake Whiteman, that's not like, with how good everyone else is in Great Britain, it's still going to be very hard to make the team at 90%. So just getting on that British team and then peaking for Worlds again, it's going to be really tough for all those guys, because yeah, you got the lost two world champions, and then you've got a 3:47 guy, and then you've got good competition behind them.
Interesting here to see some of the comments back to them, you know, today's actual mile race. There's a comment here by Simling Running. He would have had the record except for the extra distance in the beginning. Yeah, I feel like Jakob, did he run the first turn out in lane two, or was he right behind the rabbit at that point?
No, he ran the first turn in lane two. You kind of have to in a mile. Almost, like, it's very hard. The thing about the mile is it starts on the turn. So it's very hard for anyone to run the shortest distance possible unless you're in lane one, or unless you decide to back off, in which case you're slowing yourself down so much that's not benefiting. So it is very tough. You can't just say, like, oh, these two guys, this guy's going off to the world record, we're going to give him lane one and no one pass him. That's one of the tough things about the mile, is that first turn.
Yeah, actually, I was trying to replay the race in my head, and I forgot it was a mile, because I'm like, wait, the backstretch. Yeah, it's crazy. The 1500, the men's 1500 a mile delivered so well this year, and there's just so many good storylines. I mean, the women's side delivered as well, but on a different thing. Like, there's no drama. Just, it's like the Faith Kipyegon show. But I guess, John, this wasn't the men's mile was not the only performance in the meet. Should we, anything else you want to say on it, or should we recap some of the other stuff?
I'll just say Cole Hawker, you got to be pretty encouraged by that. You know, he's closing his season well. I think I said at the start of 2023, I could have thought he could medal. And I think if he gets a full year of training under him, he still can medal. That's on the table. He's not like, you know, I wouldn't put his odds ahead of Whiteman or Kerr, like a healthy Whiteman or Kerr or Ingebrigtsen or Neguse. But, you know, he could be that Nordahl guy. You know, if he closes and like Nordahl did for the bronze this year, I could see that outcome. So I think that's a good race for Cole Hawker. He's got some decisions to make in terms of, is he going to follow Ben Thomas back to Virginia Tech? But there's a good run for him. And then, yeah, it's kind of funny. Niels Laros, an 18-year-old, just ran 3:48. And we just were like, yeah, whatever. Because like, he's just been at that level the entire year. But let's just say that one more time. An 18-year-old ran 3:48 for the mile, Niels Laros. So that was ridiculous as well.
I converted that here to 16 for 1,500. I mean, John, 331.6. What's his PB right now?
That's right around there. It's 331.
And so while we're doing it, I will convert Yared's time. This is with the 1.0802 conversion. That's the official Let's Run conversion Rojo loves to use. Yared converts to 327.3. And that means, yeah, 327.1 for Jakob.
Which is funny because I asked Jakob, I said, was this the best performance of your career? And he said, this or Silesia, they're basically the same. So according to Rojo's conversion, they are. Yared, it's kind of funny. I'm like, I told him, like, you went up a level today, dude. And he's like, the mile, I feel like those conversions are off. Like, it's a little generous sometimes. So I don't know. I think to me, it seems fairly clear, not only from the time, but from how close he was to Ingebrigtsen. Ingebrigtsen has been pretty consistent all year long. If he's right with Ingebrigtsen, that means he improved a fair amount because he wasn't right with Ingebrigtsen in any of his other races.
I mean, he was fairly close, John. I'm trying to think which race, but
He wasn't that far back in Rabat, but he never threatened him. It's not like he was close enough that last 200 to do damage.
Yeah, this was the closest he came to actually winning the race. But the thing that, to me, why I would say this is a race performance, one, it converts to 327. He's run 329 this year. But even apart from that, look at how far back third place was. You know, this is sort of the year of fast times. They're like 2.7 seconds faster than George Mills. Like, they crushed everybody else.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been that gap from Yared to the third place guy this year. You know, most of these races, there's a lot of guys within like a second of Yared. Not today. Jakob brought an A game today. I think an A plus gets him the world record. I thought he could maybe try. It's a world record. It's stood for 24 years nearly. 24 years. I guess I should have accounted that it would take an A-plus performance to get it. We should never assume that things go down, even if it's not quite as good as the 1500 record.
The crazy thing is, Weldon, Jakob ran an A race for him. One of his two best races ever, either this or Silesia. And Jakob and Yared almost beat him. And I know that Jakob did a lot of the pacing. You know, if he's not towing along Yared, maybe it's harder, but that's also how Jakob runs. Like, Jakob's going to be pacing, whether it's this or it's a championship, he's going to be the guy leading out front. So the fact that even on his absolute best day, he was only barely better than Nagus, that's got to be very encouraging for Yared Nagus. And Jakob, I give him a lot of credit for this because he's like, at the end of the race, he's just like, this is a good result for the sport, basically. He's like, it makes the event more interesting. It's more interesting when you've got multiple guys at the level I'm at instead of just having me at that level. And I agree with him. You know, it is kind of fun when Jakob's the guy to be shot at and then we're like, okay, can he hold everyone off? But it's also fun when you've got two guys running, you know, historically fast times. So, and maybe we'll have more next year. Who knows? That was a lot of fun. All right, let's move on from the mile. We spent half an hour of it, but it deserves it. That was one of the greatest mile races in the history of the world. So, where do you want to go next, Weldon? Do we stay distance? If we're going to talk distance, I think we need to talk about the women's 1500. I guess the steeplechase. We had the second and third fastest times in history in the women's steeplechase. That event's kind of forgotten this year because, frankly, I feel like there's no star power, even though these women are now running historically fast. But that was really great. Or we had the 400 hurdles at the start, the Benjamin versus Warhol matchup.
Let's go to the steeple first. But the one comment here on the 1500, there's a comment here in the chat from Frode Ulstead. this ain't happening. He says, since Jakob paced Yard 1,500 meters for a new American record in the miles, Yard's to pace Jakob the 1,200 meters next time. There's 0% chance that happened. These guys are rivals. I'm sorry. There's just that's not happening. That's not on the cards, and I like it. Like, once Yard isn't quite an equal to Jakob, but he's a huge threat now. And I think going into Worlds, obviously, he was a threat, but we hadn't seen a time like this. It just makes the event even more interesting because, John, what was the one way we thought Jakob could beat everybody?
Well, just dropping everyone, right?
Right. And now, next year, even if it's like a world record type pace race, I'm not convinced. He beats everybody, right? Like,
no, we said this before. Well, then look, if he tries to go wire to wire or tries to take off with like 900 to go, we're assuming, okay, he might just be fitter than everyone else. Like, he could win. Normally, that strategy is terrible for anyone who tries it because you need to be way fitter than everyone else. But we're like, oh, Jakob might be way fitter than everyone else. This showed he's not way fitter than everyone else. He's fitter than Neguse. He's not way fitter. So if Neguse is in this kind of shape in the Olympic final, Jakob is probably going to have a bad time if he tries to lead that thing.
Yeah, some comment here about whether Hawker said we're moving on to events. Can Hawker get down to 328? He should join the on group, though. Well, I think Uncle Phil would have a slight problem with that. What would happen if some guy just said, I'm breaking the contract, I'm out? Like, I wonder, like, how would that work? Would they just say, you can't race? We'll sue you? Like, you have to wear our stuff? Like, that would be so fascinating. But, well, one thing about on. George Mills is in the on European group, which isn't nearly as credentialed as the on American group. But on went second, third, fourth in this race. Like, they've done an amazing job in a quick time establishing themselves. And supporters, their shoes are like, you can't compare, but like, people should consider the on spikes, obviously, right? Like, Mario Garcia was fourth in this one, 3:47.69 in a Spanish record. Like,
well,
Ritz and crew have delivered, but even now the European group is delivering. So it's good to have not just Nike dominate everything and also for there to be non-Nike groups. So great job for them.
One interesting thing about the spikes, Weldon, I couldn't help but think this when I was talking to George Beamish, who was third in the men's steeple. Great result for him. He was just like, I don't feel beat up at all. Like, normally my legs feel beaten up, or he's always dealing with some injury. And the steeplechase, you get more pounding on the legs than any event. You know, those water jumps, you're landing pretty hard from a high distance. And I would think for a fragile guy like him, the steeple would lead to a lot of stress injuries. And he said it really hasn't. And I do wonder if it's, you know, maybe these extra cushion spikes, or, you know, maybe Let's Run listener Jordan Donnelly of On might have to give us the scoop on how they keep those things cushioned or whatever. But it's been impressive to see. And obviously they've got a good product, but they've got a bunch of great athletes out there as well. All right, let's go to this women's steeplechase. This one, in the mix zone, I was watching it. Well, then they don't have a clock down there. So all I can tell, I'm like, okay, they're running next to each other, but you know, how fast is this thing really going? It turns out really effing fast. We had the world record holder, Beatrice Chepkoech, who was somehow rediscovered her form this year in her 30s, against Winfried Yavi, the world champion from Bahrain. And they were duking it out on that final lap. Chepkoech is so much better over the hurdles that I was thinking she passed her on the final water jump, and I'm like, all right, this is going to be it. But then Yavi battles back and passes her again. And then Chepkoech, I was like, all right, she's going to make up some ground on the final hurdle. But she tried to duck inside and go on the rail, and then had to go back out to the rail. And I, you know, Yavi ended up winning by a full second in the end. So maybe it didn't matter, but I don't know. Chepkoech probably didn't do herself any favors not knowing exactly where to cross that final hurdle. But both of them, it was a fantastic duel over the final lap. Yavi wins it 8:50.66. That's the number two time in history, behind only Chepkoech's 8:44 world record. Then Chepkoech runs number three all time, 8:51.67. Faith Cherytich gets a PB, 8:59.65 in third. So three women under 9 minutes. I don't know. Weldon, is it just pessimistic of me to start wondering, because the last time we've seen these women run super fast in the steeplechase, they get popped? I mean, look at number two and three on the all-time list before today. It was Ruth Jibet, the Olympic champ from 2016, banned. And then Nora Gerudo, world champ from last year, banned. So my radar, you know, my guard goes up a little bit when I see people running times that only either Chip Kowich or convicted dopers have run before. But I guess Beatrice Chip Kowich has already run 8:44. So I don't know if we can say like, oh, 8:51 is crazy for her. I don't know. I've been burned before in this event. I'll just say that.
Let's see, John. I'm trying to think how to say this. I don't blame you for being like, not
also Bahrain has a Bahrain has a horrible record when it comes to doping cases. Let's just say that.
I will say that. Yeah, John, I see why, like, you don't want to get burned again, but at the same time, I still think there's a lot of meat on the bone left in this event. Yeah. I think people should be running about 8:50s. So look at the times we're seeing in flat events now for the women, like 14 lows, 3:50s. I mean, granted the 3:50s, one woman, but we've had others. So it doesn't shock me that someone can run 8:50. And you say there's no star power. Well, if they keep going with this and no one gets popped, I mean, Winfred Yavi is the star now. Beatrice Chipkowicz is the world record holder. She's getting back in form. These two had a really good rivalry. You know, before there weren't like till Worlds, and they ran, I think, 8:54. Now Yavi sort of has Chipkowicz's number, but Chipkowicz like put up much more of a challenge today than at Worlds. I mean, she like went past after that last water barrier, and they closed crazy fast. I think they were 6:59 at 5:59 at 2K, 5:58 or something like that. The last lap today was like, I don't know if it's equivalent because, you know, the barriers can be in different places, was 65 seconds. I think at Worlds it closed like 68 seconds. There was just tremendous running at the end of this race from both of them. So if you want to, yes, in this sport, always keep your radar up. I don't think it's fair to like keep your radar up in a certain event, but before Chepkowicz's time was such an outlier, you just sort of like, okay, how the hell is that possible? If you're not sort of skeptical or wondering or like saying like, if this is too good to be true, I'm not going to be shocked. You're sort of crazy. You don't follow the sport very carefully, but I can still appreciate these runs for being amazing runs and sort of wanting to hope they're legitimate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. I agree with you. I do think the 8:50s, like low 8:50s, we should have a few women being able to run that fast. The problem is, the only other ones who have done it, apart from Chipkowicz, have been banned. So, you know, maybe that means Yavi, that she is the one to do it now, and we'll see it next year. You know, we've got Faith Cherotich and Jacqueline Chipkowicz, who are third and fourth in this race. They're both young. They've both gone sub 9. I think they're only going to continue to improve. So, yeah, this event, it's getting more and more competitive. This was one of the most competitive steeples ever. I mean, 8:51 and losing, we've never seen that before in a women's steeple. So this event did reach a new level with this race, and I'm excited to see it continue building in 2023. My question is, you know, are the Americans just going to get totally left behind here? Because Courtney Wayman was ninth in this race in 9:20. Emma Coburn's dealt with some injuries. She's been fading a little bit. Courtney Frerichs had a disastrous season. Like, if this becomes a low 8:50s event, I mean, Courtney Frerichs has run 8:57, but if this becomes a low 8:50s event, are we going to see any Americans near the front of the pack?
I'm not very optimistic anymore. Emma Coburn still has a story she tells. Well, we think she can still be good in the future, but her best is 9:02, John. I mean, she was world champion 9:02, but you do mention Courtney Frerichs running 8:57. To me, Courtney Frerichs running 8:57 shows that women should be running sub 8:50. I don't think Courtney Frerichs is the most, she's a pretty good runner, especially in the American level, but I don't think, look at her flat times. It doesn't stand out like, oh, she should be the world beater in something. So, right. But yeah, Courtney Wayman, she's run really well the last couple of years, but the end of the season, I applaud her for still going out there, but her last few performances have been just pretty atrocious. But it's a long season. I think there's something about being a pro. You make the Diamond League final, you run it. I like seeing that. I like seeing her out there. Can she get down to 9 minutes? I don't see why not, but I'm going to start wondering if 9 minutes isn't going to cut it anymore. I've sort of wondered that for a long time in this event. So if this is the new standard, they go out and essentially a tad under 6 minutes and end up running 8:50. this event might be running away from like the talent pool we have in America right now. So if this event sort of goes where the 1500 is internationally or the 5K, I don't expect any American women to be super competitive, but who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I think your analysis is correct that well. All right, let's move to the women's 1500 meters. I mean, Faith Kipyegon, we don't need to spend that much time on this race. This is what we've seen all season from Faith Kipyegon. I think the debate, I should do an article about this, Weldon, because I was listening to the House of Run podcast. They were like, is this the greatest season ever by any distance runner? And I just want to lay out, I think there's a case to be made that it is. She has world titles in the 1500 and the 5,000 meters. She has world records in the 1500, which she obliterated, the 5,000, which she broke by 1 second, and the mile, which she obliterated. She has wins in Doha, 358, then Florence, 349, Monaco, 407 in the mile, and now Prefontaine, 350. Zero defeats in any of those. I don't know. I mean, she's broken three world records, two world titles, historically fast times. What do you think? Could this be the greatest season we've ever seen from a distance runner?
Like any distance runner's season ever? Wow. I mean, you shouldn't penalize someone because it's not the Olympic year, right?
I don't think it's, you should, no.
The level of dominance. I mean, but like, what about Hassan's triple? You're sort of just saying like, okay, that's a one-off accomplishment.
I mean, I think Hassan's 2021 season was good, but clearly Kipyegon was a better 1500 runner that year. I think you would say Hassan's triple in the Olympics was maybe the greatest accomplishment in the history of women's distance running. But in terms of a season-long thing, I think you'd have to say Kipyegon's 2023 is better.
Yeah. I think you're there for sure. I think it's the best season in one event. I think maybe for sure you can say that.
Oh, I mean,
like this race today, they go out in 205. I think the lights were set on the Prefontaine record, which was, I think, 354. And she just crushed everybody and crushed the lights. It was just like, I don't care that it's September 16th. I'm not tired. I think it's pretty not easy for her, but I think for her to go like 354 would be very easy for her. So she just goes out, boom, you know, 350. There we go.
Yeah, 350. She won this thing by more than 3 seconds. Dariba Welteje, the silver medalist from Worlds, gets a nice PB. She goes from 355.08 to 353.93. Laura Muir runs her second fastest time ever, 355.16. Trawenny Hailu, PB in fourth. Lyndon Hall breaks her own Australian record, 356.92. Like, the thing, it's kind of like what we've seen in the men's side, except the gap is bigger from 1 to 2 in the women's 1500. But you've got Kipyegon running 349 and 350 at the front of these races. Everyone else is going to be running in 350. So you had eight women under 358 in this race. Corey McGee runs 401. Gets 10th, and then Sinclair Johnson, not a great race for her, 12th in 403. It's just Kipyegon has pushed this event to a new level. And it's not just Kipyegon, it's the shoes, it's the lights and that sort of stuff. But when you've got someone running that fast up front, you can either just totally sit back and cede it to them, or you can kind of like, all right, we'll go out with her, and then if she really breaks away, we'll let her go. And that's kind of what they did. But she has helped push this event to a new level in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty astounding. Sinclair Johnson, come on. Whatever. I would have rather had, obviously, Addie Wiley in this race. But she got the wild card and gets second to last. I don't know. If they're going to give you the wild card, you better be ready to run. That's what I got to say. And there's another interesting thread of the message boards. You know, is Corey McGee ever going to break 4? Which is a crazy thought. Like, she's a good runner. She's been running great recently, right? Made the last 3 U.S. teams. But John, think about that. She still hasn't broken 4, which is like, it shows Corey McGee, one, like, knows how to run championship style races. She gets the best out of herself, knows how to make teams. But I mean, John, she's 10 seconds back a Faith Kipyegon. I mean, yeah, in a mile. I mean, that's not even the same ballpark. That's just crazy. Like, imagine you're like a 350 miler and a 4 minute miler.
No, I talked to her about that, and I was like, is it hard going into these races against Faith? And she's just like, yeah, initially, you know, you always want to go in and thinking you can beat everyone. But at some point, she's just like, kind of always know how these things are going to end. She's just like, yeah, you kind of just forget she's in there and you got to focus on racing everyone else. So I did talk to Corey. I'm like, you know, is it frustrating for you to not have broken 4 minutes yet? You've made these global finals. And she thought she was in sub four shape at some point this year. She just didn't put it together in a race. And, you know, now it's kind of the end of the year. She was clearly exhausted after this one. Like, she's tired. She's got her bachelorette party coming up, I think, in a week or two. She's going to Mallorca. It's a pretty nice location for a bachelorette. So, yeah, I think the problem with McGee is she's 31, 32 years old. And this was one of her most consistent years. But if she doesn't get sub four this year, she might not ever get it, because she would need to get even, you know, she needs to stay at this level for another year. And it's just hard. Like, it's hard. I think she was in sub four shape. I believe that she was in sub four shape earlier this year, but her best race of the season was probably that mile, right? Didn't she run a 4:18, which I think would be an equivalent to a sub four, but it was a mile. And it wasn't a 1500. So she doesn't get credit for that.
Yeah. I mean, she's got it in her to break four. So I hope she does it. Yeah, it's not like the talent isn't there, but I still think, you know, the Kipyegon gap in talent, it just shows that's there. That's not going away. So say Corey's even like a 357 runner. Well, Faith is a 349 runner. It's just, it's so crazy.
Okay. Men's steeplechase. Do we, I don't know if we need to talk about that much. Well, I mean, it already lost some luster when you had no Gurma, and then Elbakali is a DNS. I don't know what the deal was with him, but then you're just like, okay, it's kind of wide open. Getting at Wale, for some reason, has just totally lost his form this year, or lost his form at least in this race. I feel like he's like pretty consistently up there and hasn't been as much in 2023. So it turned out to be Simon Coetsch, the young Kenyan who bombed at Worlds, but has been pretty great, ran 8:04 in Monaco. He gets the win, 8:06, very comfortable in the end. 19-year-old Ethiopian, Samuel Fairu, second, 8:10, just off his PB. And then George Beamish, as usual, kicks his way up on the last lap. He gets third in 8:14, but fairly forgettable race, I think, overall in the scheme of things.
Yeah, John, when you said, do we need to say much about the men's steeplechase? Right then you said more than I was going to probably say about this race. Okay. We had we had a world record in this event this year, and Elbakali still hasn't lost. So
yeah, the two best guys didn't run it, so the race wasn't that great.
Yeah, but outside of them, this event sort of is like, well, whatever in general, and they weren't here. So I don't know if Elbakali, like, was he in town, John? I heard some athletes had visa issues, but like,
yeah,
when he...
I don't know. I didn't hear an explanation. I think the assumption was he was planning on running it, so it might have been visa, but I'm not really sure. I mean, if the Olympic champion can't get a visa to run the United States, it's pretty ridiculous, but we've complained about that before. All right, let's talk about some of the sprint stuff, because we had some epic races here. I mean, the 400 hurdles. What a start to this meet. I am, with about 100 meters to go, I'm like, all right, this is going exactly how I thought. Carsten Warholm's the best in the world. He's not hungover from Worlds anymore. He's going to come out here. He'll run 46 mid and he'll win. He didn't run a bad race. He ran 46.53. That's 200ths off of his season's best. But he got beat by a fantastic race by Rye Benjamin, who I was like, where did this come from, Rye? And he's like, well, my coach and I, we just kind of decided I would go back to my old style of race, which was a little bit more conservative, and then you really make a big move, big push over the last 200. That's what he did. He went out pretty slowly in this race. I think even Rye was like, did I go out too slowly? Did I totally misjudge this? He did not. He runs 46.39, second fastest time of his life. I think it's now number four all time. I think it's only him, Warholm, And then DeSantos's title, world title winning run last year in the 400 hurdles. Those are the only times that anyone's gone faster. This was the fastest non-championship time ever. So I wasn't expecting this, not based on how Ry Benjamin looked at the world championships, but this event now got more interesting next year because I was like, okay, it's always going to be Carsten and Ry, and Carsten's always a little bit better. And now it's like, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, this thing like turned on a head at the end because I think I was more focused on Warholm versus McMaster. And then just Benjamin, the final 100 was like ridiculous. And at the time, I'm like, oh, wow, he ran down Warholm. Like, Warholm got beat in the last race. Must not be that fast. And then you see the time. It's Diamond League record, as you said, number four time ever. And you're like, wait, Warholm just ran 46:53 and got beat. So it's not like there was the post-Worlds letdown for Warholm, but not in this one. He brought it and got beat by a faster guy. Like, and it does make the event more interesting. Now you sort of look back, right? Like Kevin Young's record, 46:78, just stood there forever. And we've had this sort of big three. They're still the only three guys that run faster than it. And if they're all on their A game, I don't know who wins. I guess that's how good I think that all of them are.
Well, you know, I think Benjamin's right there, and Dos Santos, when he was healthy, like he wasn't healthy this year. Let's be honest. You know, he missed a chunk of time. He came back, but him this year was basically what Warholm was last year, and now we saw Warholm get back to his old self in 2023, and I think if Dos Santos does that next year. Yeah, it's somewhat blasphemous to say this, Weldon, but the 2021 Olympic 400 hurdles final was one of the greatest races in the history of track and field. It could be even better next year in Paris if all three of these guys are healthy and at their best.
I'm not sure about that one, John. When a 45 went up on the clock for the first time, I was like shocked out of my mind. And Benjamin ran what, 46:17?
Okay, I guess I'll say this.
If they can top that one, wow, look out. But yeah, if all three, that's what I'm saying. If all three bring their best, I think, you know, they can be in that range, and that would be a better race. It wouldn't be as shocking, but like they're the three best in this event ever. I don't know if the shoes are making slight difference or whatever, but like they're performing at a level never seen in this event, and they've all shown they know how to bring it when it matters. So it's one of the premier events to look forward to next year.
Yeah, so. maybe it's blasphemous to say it would be a better race because part of the what was so epic about Tokyo is that we've been hyping up this showdown for years, and then they actually exceeded expectations and they took the event way beyond where it had previously been. I mean, the world record went from 46.70 to 45.94. It's unlikely we're going to see that kind of leap. I don't think anyone's going to run 45.2 next year, but I wouldn't be shocked if we had multiple guys sub 46.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that people can run that fast with hurdles.
But it's nuts. Can we please get these guys racing more than once a year? I mean, this was their second matchup of 2023. They ran at Worlds and they ran at the Diamond League. Like, we need to get either Warholm out at pre next year or Benjamin has to go to Oslo. I can't just have them running against each other in these championship finals because it's so electric when they do line up against each other. I mean, look at the two times they've raced outside of global championships. We had what we saw today, amazing race. And then we had the 2019 Diamond League final where they both broke 47 seconds and were right with each other. I mean, they're two fantastic athletes. It's great for the sport to have them competing more. We just need to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah. And I think also this shows who knows if Benjamin would have run this if it wasn't, you know, a Nike meet. But I'm really glad he did it. I feel like sometimes he says, oh, I'm not going to race. I need the big money out there. Would he have skipped this if Nike hadn't, you know, encouraged him to run? Thank God he ran the race. Essentially just what I'm saying. Like, I think there's a benefit to competing all the time. Like, look at Warholm. That guy competes all the, like, very often in this event. and he's the best in the world at it. So you can't tell me like, oh, you race too much. You don't run well when it matters. Like, so I was just glad to see him because talking to Rye at Worlds, I actually want to go back and like rethink about that interview. I swear he was talking like the season was over. But, you know, he was battling injuries and then to come back and maybe this new race plan. And I wonder if other guys in this event might think like, wow, look what he did sort of not being so aggressive. Like there's clearly a couple ways to skin this cat now in this event because
yeah, but
that final 100 was amazing.
Yeah. There's only two guys with his talent though. It's him. Sorry. Two other guys. It's him, Dos Santos and Warholm. Like McMaster's had a great year, but at his best, those three are still on a different level from him. All right, let's move to the men's 100. This was fun. This event got more interesting because Coleman, who did not have a great world championships and didn't have a great season last year either, suddenly is on a hot streak and has run 9.83 back to back. He ran that in Xiamen, and at the time I'm like, all right, is this Xiamen track just, you know, is it a really, really fast sprint track? Like, how much do I pay attention to this time? You know, this guy was only fifth in the worlds. Well, no, he showed that wasn't a one-off. He came back. He beat Noah Lyles, the world champion. He beat Fernando Manyala. He runs 9.83. He ties for the world lead. So we're going to end 2023 with Coleman, Lyles, and Zonnell Hughes all tied as the world leader at 9.83. But to me, I'm like, this is the best Christian Coleman's looked since he won Worlds in 2019. And if he can get to this level, if he can, and maybe even improve on it next year, maybe he does come back and win the Olympics. It's like, you know, it's much more interesting that he wins this race than it would have been if Lyles just smokes him, you know, something like that. And then you've got Kashaun Thompson, the Jamaican, in fourth, 9.87. I talked to him. That guy's a big talent, Weldon. He's like, oh, I've had kind of a rough up and down season. This is a guy who's improved from like 10.2 to 9.85 this year. He was second behind Coleman in Xiamen. And he's kind of disappointed with how he's doing. He's like, yeah, I'm capable of even more. So it should be a fun event to follow next year. Curly's going to be back with a vengeance. You know, he's coming. But yeah, great run for Christian Coleman.
Yeah, John, you said he had a bad world championships. I guess the results play that out. But on the NBC broadcast, they play up the angle that he like stumbled, took a misstep with like 70 meters. Oh, if he hadn't done that, would it have turned out differently? I don't think he would have won the Worlds. I'm sorry. I don't think that was his problem there. But I think maybe he would have medaled or something like that. But I'm now looking at the results of this Kashaun Thompson guy. I mean, yeah, it doesn't even make the like Jamaican championships.
Well, no, he ran 9.91. He had this huge breakout of the Jamaican championships, but his coach, Stephen Francis, he's had these injury issues. He tore his hamstring last year and he's had like stress fractures. And because of that, they didn't want him running more than one round in any meet this year. So he runs 9.91, huge personal best. He dropped from 10.18 to 9.91. And then just bows out, gets fifth in the Diamond League in Monaco, runs some race in Schifflang, where I don't even, maybe that's Switzerland, 9.99, and then 9.85 in Xiamen and 9.87 today. So this guy, monster talent, Weldon. He's got a good coach, Stephen Francis. Jamaica's got a bunch of young talent right now, but he's a guy I'm keeping my eye on, especially his attitude with him. You know, he seemed pretty underwhelmed. He wasn't particularly happy with running 9.87, even though this is, you know, fourth in the Diamond League final. It's one of the best results of his career to date.
John, I'm even surprised you talked to this guy. Maybe we should do a story on him because Stephen Francis must just do an amazing job of spotting talent. But like, yeah, up till 2020, his best time was 10.56. Now, granted, he was, 19 at the time? But that's not that fast for a 19-year-old in this era. 10.21 till this year? Like, it's amazing. And then also it's pretty cool. They just said like, no, you're running one round of the Jamaican championships. I don't care how you do. And he blasts a 9.91. They're like, that's it. I mean, the slowest he ran this year is the 10.04 at the Monaco Diamond League. Like, yeah, watch out. But John, you know what you got to do at the Worlds and Olympics?
What?
Run more than one round.
Oh, yeah. No.
So, mean, it's sort of crazy that I would love to know how, like, what made them identify this guy, even as a 10-5, like, oh, he's going to be a world beater. We got to go this soft on him. But yeah, I mean, running rounds, it's part of the, I mean, I wonder if you go back to like his high school days or something like that, but like, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's something you got to master, and we'll see. I just know the talent is definitely there with that guy. And then, you know, looking at, like I already said, great result for Coleman. 985 for Noah Lyles, that's a good run. Like, he got beat. He almost ran them down at the end. But this, I mean, ultimately, this result doesn't really matter that much to Noah Lyles. He's the world champion. He did what he went out to accomplish. Getting second by 200ths, I'm sure he wanted to beat Coleman, but this was a victory lap for him. He gets to be introduced as world champion. You know, his season couldn't have gone much better.
Yeah. I'm glad he showed up. And originally said he wasn't. And yes, appearance fees probably play into that. But as a sport, it's better when he's at this race. Like, we need the stars competing, like, occasionally, you know, at events besides the Worlds. Even, like, I didn't like how every Nike athlete was wearing the same thing, but that'll probably get some mention elsewhere. People are like, oh, look, they're wearing the Oregon Green Ducks. Like, we need our sport mentioned as much as possible. Just in general. And if our stars aren't there, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't help. So it was great to see him. You know, he gets slightly beat, but as you said, I think it makes the event more interesting next year. Like, look out, man. Like, I mean, men's 100 meter in the US, Curly Lyles Coleman. I mean, Marvin Bracy got a silver medal last year. That's very tough. Trayvon Bermell will come back, like, maybe. It's just, look out, man, because I think one of those big three somehow easily could not make the team next year.
Yeah, you have the lost three world champions from the United States, so three different guys, and then you've got two guys who medaled last year, and then you've got Krevon Charleston, who still doesn't have a sponsor from as far as I can tell, but the U.S. champion this year. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. The uniforms thing, I'll say that I didn't even realize it was supposed to be Oregon colors. I'm like, oh, it's just, you know, it's like turquoise or dark green or I don't know. It didn't seem like an obvious Oregon green, but I guess that's what they're going for, green and yellow. I don't like it. I don't like it when the whole field is the same singlet. I like how they're different. Like, I like how Sinclair Johnson would have a Union Athletics Club singlet, and how Faith Kipyegon gets a world champion singlet. At least there's a little differentiation. Some of these races you just get, I mean, I guess it looks good for Nike that they've got all this representation, but I don't know if it looks good for Nike. It just looks the same to me. I like that having the different variations of the Nike kit instead of just one for everyone.
Well, they mentioned on the broadcast, like right at the very beginning, and Swangard obviously is from Eugene. So it was the publicity Nike wanted for sure. Did Sinclair Johnson wear it, or is she wearing the...
No, Sinclair Johnson wore the Oregon Nike kit, not the blue UAC. So, yeah, I don't know about that. All right, women's 100 meters. Sha'Carri Richardson, I mean, this... She ran 10.80. It's not like it was a terrible race, but probably her worst Diamond League of the season. It was her only Diamond League that she lost of the season. But she got beat by three women running 10.70. She already... Sorry, 10.7s. She already did what she needed to do this year. This is just like Noah Lyles. It's a victory lap for her. This was a good run for Sharika Jackson. I mean, 10.70. She was the clear winner. Talu, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. 10.75 a second. And then, Weldon, don't look now. Olympic year, Elaine Thompson, hurrah, is heating up. 10.79, season's best. She's trending in the right direction. And I don't know if it was the coaching change or if she's healthier than she was, but watch out, because she ran 10.54 2 years ago. It really wouldn't shock me if she shows up and wins the double-double again in Paris, because we know how good she is when she's healthy, and she's showing that she's getting back to that level at the end of 2023.
Yeah. I mean, she coaching change this year. Fired her husband as coach, but you know, we're getting closer to those Olympics somehow. She always seems to do it. And we should appreciate the year Sha'Carri Richardson had this year. in the performance she had at Worlds. I mean, 10.65 into a wind to win a Worlds. But people were commenting on the message board as well. Like, I felt like there's a new level of maturity with her. She's congratulating the competitors. She seems sort of happy, giddy, very just with everything, you know, talking to Lewis Johnson after the race. And this is a tough event. She ran 10.80 today. John, you know what she ran at USA's when she was the champion, the star? 10.82.
Yeah, she had a horrible start in that race, though.
Oh, good point. I don't think her start wasn't very good today either.
Right.
So maybe that was
it was good when it mattered. Yeah, remember her start was horrible in the semifinals at Worlds, but she still made the final, and then she had a great start in the final, and she runs 10.65. So for her, it was all about can you get the start right when it mattered. The World Championship final, hell of a lot more important than the Prefontaine Classic. So she did what she needed to do.
I mean, maybe that is the difference with her. She gets a good start, she wins this race. When she doesn't, she's a 10.8 runner. And being a 10.8 runner, it's probably going to leave you off the podium these days.
Well, no, I'd say, look, if she gets a great start, she's 10.6. If she gets okay start, 10.7. Bad start, 10.8.
Yeah, 10.8 doesn't cut it. So she didn't, you know, her natural hair did, John. That was for those wondering. I was like, who's this woman with the big hair? Oh, that's Sha'Carri. That's her natural hairstyle today. No wig. So for all the fashion minded people out there.
Well, I've learned it's best just when it comes to women not to even comment on their hair because there's no upside for us. We point something, you know, there's really only downside in getting called out for something. So I just stay away from the hair comments.
They mentioned it on the broadcast. My daughter's coming in. Huge Sha'Carri fan to say goodnight. Goodnight, Cece.
I think Cece's got the right idea. Well, then, you know, we've gone for over an hour now, and I think we've recapped everything of significance. There were some other races, but I don't think we really need to dive into them. We do have a terrific day of action lined up tomorrow. Jakob will be back in the 3K. Grant Fisher, who has been running some laps here at Hayward Field right now, he's in the Diamond League final in the 3,000 meters. A thing Mo in the 800. And then Sharika Jackson, could she get the world record in the final race, the final track race of the 2023 season tomorrow in the 200 meters? You know, I think it's on the table. We saw some fast times today. That's going to be fun to watch. So another terrific day of track incoming. We'll have analysis. We've got interviews on letsrun.com on the YouTube channel right now. We'll have some recaps of the meet in a few hours. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Yeah, enjoyed talking track with you all season, Weldon. I don't think we're going to do this again tomorrow unless there's, you know, some sort of crazy performance that we really need to break down. We'll hit everything on the regular recap show on Tuesday. But any final thoughts before we sign off?
Well, John, I see Habs wants to know if there's an LRC meetup in Eugene. Supporters Club members, find John. He'll buy your beers. John, don't go to the Wild Duck, though, because there'll be too many people there. Is it Duck
Wild
open?
Ducks- not open yet. Well, thank I think God. Next week. So my thinking is, oh, the problem is there's an Oregon football game. I hope every place isn't packed afterwards. I need to do a bunch of writing, but maybe around the 9 or 10 p.m. region, I'll try to head out somewhere and let people know where I'm at. So, and I got some work ahead of me until then, though, and I got to get some lunch because I haven't eaten yet.
Right. We can email Habs. You have Habs' email, so.
Yeah.
People are saying, John, they want us to break it all down tomorrow. We have a Tuesday podcast regular. Hey, I'm out tomorrow. You guys, you and Rojo, you can decide, but
wait a minute. Tomorrow the meet ends at 6 p.m. Eastern and the Patriots kick off at 8:20. So yeah, I don't know if we're going to be able to do a live show afterwards. Well, then.
And an amazing meet of track and field today. Coming into this, I was very excited about Diamond League final being in the U.S., but a week ago, I was experiencing track fatigue. This meet today delivered from the gun to the end, start to finish, compelling matchups and everything. I mean, we didn't even talk about any like field events with like an American record, Chase Elin, the shot put. Like, there was just great performances on the track. And to end it with a 3:43 times two Bowerman mile, I loved it. If you like this podcast, you're watching live on YouTube, the show. The only way to get it is a podcast. You got to be a Letsrun.com Supporters Club member. Join today. You save like 20. You can save still 20% on running shoes, full price running shoes. Like that, buy one pair of shoes, you save $30. Join for a year, you get a free t-shirt. These are like amazingly great quality t-shirts. Appreciate everyone from the comments. Talk to you later, John.
Bye.